Good afternoon. This is CCNSO Members Day, Day 2, Part 3. We'll be in session from 1:30 through 3 in the afternoon on Wednesday, March 14, 2018, Meeting Room 209 BC.
Good afternoon, everyone. I hope you had a lovely lunch break. We'll kick this session off in 1 minute or maybe two, depending on how lucky you might be. Okay, let's kick off. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for coming back for lunch for this extraordinarily exciting session updating you on the progress of Workstream 2 of the ICANN Accountability Improvement Process. I am going to run you through a brief presentation by ICANN Accountability Standards. And I'll just give you a sense of where the project is at. I will take you through the recommendations, the key recommendations. I'll outline the process going forward and the fact that we'll be looking, I think, to the CCNSO to make an approval decision at the Panama meeting. I'll ask if you've got any questions, and then we will go on to the much more exciting CCTLD update section of the agenda. So that is what I will do for you, and what you will do for me is have a fun time listening, and maybe some questions. So in terms of the current status, this project was divided into 8 different topics. This is the 8 different topics. 4 of those topics went through public comments and more or less being finalized last year. And 4 of them have had public comments towards the end of last year and were finalized by the CCWG as final drafts this year, most recently at the meeting on Friday last week. So the good news is that we've got final working documents in all of these topic areas. There isn't a holdup in the planned timetable of the project. And what I'll do now is just give you a sense of a flavor of each area, because some of these we will have talked about before, some not. There is, I would characterize it as a very large amount of written information available if you want to delve into any of the detail. And a link to where that detail lives is at the end of this slide pack. I'm not going to be able to use that with my computer. And what the thing that's coming next in the process is we're compiling all those recommendations together, and we will be running a final public consultation. It's just really important to say that the final public consultation is to seek any views about inconsistencies or clashes between the recommendations that are in the report. It is not an opportunity to provide new substantive input on the recommendations. If you do that, your new substantive input will be recorded and made available to whoever next looks at these topics. But the CCWG will not be able to make adjustments to recommendations about anything other than ironing out any clashes or inconsistencies. We haven't found any. That doesn't mean other people won't find any. So that's the point of this comment period. That should be launched late March. We should be finished the analysis of those and getting a final report out for approval, I think in early June, maybe late May. About 3 weeks before the meeting is our target at this point. A quick run through the recommendations. There's a diversity set which looks at what diversity means in ICANN, how we can measure and promote it, and how that can be supported. A lot of this is suggestions for SOACs to take up, and it's providing some resources from the organization to support that process. So this is not going to force the CCNSO to do anything. It will provide some increased information about diversity and some hints about what we could do to improve it, which the council will need to take into a work program going forward. Guidelines for Good Faith is such a bizarre title for this piece of work. You might remember that during the transition, there was a new accountability power that directors could be removed by the empowered community. All that this Guidelines for Good Faith does is explain what we would need to do to avoid being sued by ICANN. Bernie's shaking his head. It provides a code of conduct by which if you do follow it, you're likely to be acting in good faith, and you're not going to create a reason for someone to try and sue you in the process. No, he's shaking his head again. Bernie.
ICANN will indemnify you if you are sued.
That's a much better way of putting it. Yeah, it gets you into the indemnity process. So you need to worry about this if you are looking at trying to remove an ICANN director. And if you don't plan to do that, you don't need to worry about it. The Human Rights Framework of Interpretation was a follow-on from the human rights bylaws changes. It has been developed. ICANN is working to implement it already. So there's nothing controversial in that. Jurisdiction has been one of the stickier topics in the ICANN workstream too. There are two sets of recommendations. One relates basically to how ICANN deals with sanctions on potential registries or registrars. And there are a set of proposals about how to work better with the US government on those particular sanction issues. And the other one is that there's a recommendation that there be a choice of law and choice of venue provision in ICANN registry and registrar agreements. That'll affect you if you are dealing with registrars a lot or if you are running a GTLD. Fortunately, as CCs, we're not necessarily contracted parties. And these are suggestions for the contracted parties in ICANN to work through. That's the status of the recommendations. And that did end up getting signed off last Friday. There are some recommendations on improvements for the Ombudsman. The Workstream 2 process got handed the ATRT 2 or 3 to review process of doing an independent look at how the Ombudsman was functioning. So ICANN found an external provider to do that external review. These recommendations built those recommendations into them and got broad community support. So it's about sort of enhancing the effectiveness and the independence of the Ombudsman system in ICANN. That's my summary. On SOAC accountability, there are, again, a number of things that are suggestions for SOs and ACs to take into account. So they are all framed as shoulds, doesn't create any requirements for the CCNSO. The group ended up not recommending the proposed mutual accountability roundtable. If you're curious about that, I can talk to you later. And it also had a look about whether the independent review process, the IRP, should be applicable to SOAC activities. And the thought was that this was not the case, that that would be overkill. So it doesn't recommend that expansion of the IRP's scope into the work of the CCNSO. Staff accountability is about explaining better the mechanisms that are already in place for staff accountability in ICANN, defining these clearly, and in terms of the sort of mix of staff and organizational accountability for performance, developing some service level definitions and guidelines to help make it clear to everyone what kind of level of service we can expect from ICANN on a range of things, and to give ICANN some clear guidance on what the community would like to see in that area. So relatively, again, simple set of recommendations. The transparency stuff is about saying that ICANN as a multi-stakeholder organization should be as open and transparent as it can. These are quite a detailed set of recommendations about improving document information disclosure policy, interaction with governments, transparency of board deliberations, improving the whistleblower protection, and so on. So once again, it's about saying, let's make this organization as open and transparent as possible. So that's a quick run through. Of course, there's lots of detail, and if you have the urge to delve into any of it, feel free. And if I don't know the answer to the question, I can find you the person who does. So we will be launching the public consultation, as I said, mid-March through early May. We will review those comments, which are about inconsistencies prior to ICANN 62. We would like to seek endorsement of the recommendations by the SOs and ACs at that meeting. And then it will be submitted to the ICANN board for approval. The board asked a lot of questions in their public comments about implementation, about prioritization, costs, et cetera, et cetera. And what we agreed on Friday in the CCWG was to say to ICANN, look, you need to approve the report in principle, and then there needs to be an implementation plan developed. The CCWG is a bunch of community volunteers. It doesn't have the skills or the resources to prioritize, develop an implementation plan, budget, and so on. We think that this implementation process is going to go on for some time. It might be 3 to 5 years because there isn't an endless amount of money, and there isn't an endless amount of volunteer or staff time to do this, and there's probably a logical sequencing that can be developed based on the impact of benefit from the change, how long it will take to do, how complicated it is, and so on. So what we've proposed is there'll be an implementation group of the CCWG to help support the implementation process. And we're suggesting to the board that they do a community consultation on the implementation plan at various relevant points to test their proposed sequencing, prioritization, cost base, and so on. So it's not going to be a case of the CCWG trying to hash it together quickly, and it isn't going to be a case of the board having a one fell swoop demand, this is how we're going to do it, see you later. That is all I've got for you. Are there any questions or comments? If there are, you should make a dash for the microphone to beat the queue. While anyone's thinking about it, I would just like to say that I'm deeply looking forward to this process being finished. anything else? Everything else? This process started at the end of 2014, so it will be good to wrap it up in 2018, if we can. If you have no questions, we aren't allowed to start the next session until 2 o'clock because of the remote participants. So instead of me singing you a song or keeping wittering away, might just leave you with some laptop time. I don't do stand-up comedy, I only do sit-down comedy. Yeah. Nope. Oh, Nick, how can I help?
A big thank you on behalf of all of us for your work in this area, and so that we don't have to. So very grateful for your bits on this part.
Thank you. When Matthew Way said he was standing aside and they needed to find another one, I was like, oh. But it appears that we're going to get there. So I appreciate that, Nick. Okay. Well, let's give you 15 minutes back to do whatever it is that you would like to do and start the, unless someone tells me we should do something else, and we'll start the CCTLD news session under the chairmanship of Pablo Rodriguez at 2 o'clock sharp, which is in 15 and a half minutes. Thank you.
Good afternoon and welcome. In about 3 minutes, we will be having the CCTLD news session. This is Pablo Rodriguez, and I will be chairing this session. Those presenters that will be with us, Joe Alanya, Goran Paulsen, Irina Daniela, and Fernando España, can start moving towards the front, please. How are you, Joe? We're just going to give Fernando one more minute. He's on his way here. Thanks. Well, while we wait for Fernando, we're going to start with Joe's presentation, which is on the 5 pillars of a successful registry. This is an opportunity for every one of us to take pointers on how to best ensure that we have a successful registry. That's it. Joe, thank you.
Thank you, Pablo. Good afternoon, everyone. For those of you I haven't met, I'm Joe Alanya. Just a little background. I want to thank the CCNSO for letting me share these ideas with you. I've been in the industry about almost 20 years, since the year 2000. I actually became interested as a domain investor, but somehow ended up going to work for a European or a British registry, managed the North American markets for about 12 years, and the last 4 years have been with 101 Domain, which is a registrar very focused on country codes. And that's where I really learned the most about country codes and became pretty passionate about them. And since last year, I've been a part of Afilias. I joined them in June, and I'm also a member of the Domain Name Association, a board member with the DNA. So what I want to talk to you about today, first let me give you a little introduction to Afilias, since we're going to be talking about news, and I'll try to go through this fast, and I'm going to ask somebody to look at their watch and raise their hand when I hit 4 minutes, because I understand I have 10, and I just don't want to go over. But anyway, Afilias was established in 2001, launching .info. We have offices around the world. We're one of the first foreign registries licensed in China. We manage about 22 million domain names and under management, and that's over 200-plus top-level domains. We have pretty much, I would say, three primary business lines, I like to call them. That of the registry operator, that of the registry services provider, and that of secondary DNS. The ones that we manage, that we're involved with as a registry operator, where we actually own the TLD, as well as, make sure I'm a little lost on my slides here, is include .info, .mobi, pro, and .bio. We have an IDN that means .mobi in Chinese. We're also a registry service provider. So these are organizations who have hired us. We are in the background. We don't tell them what to do. They tell us what to do. But they're very important players in the industry, such as .org, Global, Vegas, and many country codes that you see listed there as well. And I can't forget to mention .pr. Because we're very proud and very excited to be working with this organization, which we completed very recently, and we're very excited about it. We've also become involved with .au, another very important domain that we are very privileged to be working with, very hard, and we expect the transition for .au to be completed in mid-2018. Now the fun part. I want to talk about success, okay? What makes a registry successful? And I can speak based on, 18 years of working with registries that have grown and become successful and being a part of the industry. And I like to talk about an American icon, a guy named Vince Lombardi. Those that are American here would know him. He was the head coach of the Green Bay Packers in the late 50s, early 60s. He won 6 division champions, 2 conference champions, 2 Super Bowls. And because he so exemplified the spirit of football and winning, the NFL named the Super Bowl trophy the Vince Lombardi Trophy. And it was in 1961. He had 38 professional football players in front of him, and he held up this football, and he said, "Gentlemen, this is a football." Now, it's kind of strange to tell that to a professional football player, but or did he mean this was a football? No, actually, he meant this one. I was just kidding. Anyway, but his point was to consider the basics. That happens to me all the time, so I had to put that in there. And I really think that, the answer to success in a registry is not all that complicated. And I've thought a lot about this, especially since I've gone to work for Afilias, because I think we do have to go back to basics and the things that registries do. And I think we have to realize how important what we actually do is. The TLD is really important. DNS is really important. We need to do these things better. We need to scale them better. And when you think about our clients, the governments, the hospitals, the businesses, how important is it that we succeed in what we do? I don't think you can place enough value on it. So in thinking about that, I basically, when I came to work for Afilias, I thought about, what's a real easy way to sort of summarize what's most important to registries? And I wanted to keep this as sort of a foundational idea. And I thought about it a lot, and I came up with this model here. the successful registry business, and the five pillars. And I'm going to kind of breeze through them. I think the first one is transparency. And by the way, I know I'm talking to an audience that probably knows this way more than I do in many cases, so please bear with me. But I wanted to talk about basics because I think it's easy to get wrapped up and lost in all of the technology and the law and the GDRP and all the things that challenges we face. So I'm going to go through them. Transparency. Are we transparent? Are we engaging our audiences? Are we engaging our stakeholders and our customers? Reach is a big one. As a registry, you know, no matter what your objectives are, nonprofit, whether you're a university or whether you're a for-profit business, I liked something I heard the other day. Somebody said, we want to be a nonprofit, but that doesn't mean we don't want to profit. In other words, they need money. We need money to do good things. If we want to do good things, we need money. And you need reach. You need to be able to expand the audience that you're doing business with, including registrars around the world. Being unhindered. It surprises me. This is especially true in new TLDs and some of the sponsored ones, but you know, all of us are guilty of this a little bit. We make it hard for our clients to buy. We need to understand that markets work if you let them work, and if we put too many restrictions on our markets and our registrars and resellers, we hinder them. Security, I'm not going to talk about it because we talk a lot about security, but I think it's a big one. And finally, the technology. Are all the things you're doing automated? So in essence, if you look at this really closer, the idea was that these are the pillars that build trust, and they're the underpinnings. If people can trust us with their business and trust us, and you know, if we build that trust through our transparency, and if we're growing and we have the money to be able to expand our business in an ethical way, I think we go a long way. All right, I think I'm going to have to skip a few slides. But I talked about recently that we're going to be defined by our challenges. Kind of did talk about things like the legal and procedural. I'm going to skip through this. Technology, security, competition. I think this platform competition is a huge challenge. And I don't have a technical background, but I can see competition. I have a marketing background, and I've seen registries grow. And I'm going to tell you the challenges that come from the platforms. You know, people don't need a domain name to sell products online. They can go to Amazon and sell it through them. They can sell stuff on Facebook, and there's Wix and Weebly. They don't really need domain names. WordPress doesn't require domain. They sell them, but they don't require them. We have to be better at explaining why it's important to use your own identification, your own domain. I was talking about challenges. You know, I wanted to like use this slide because I love this little image of. I used to think that English was the world, and until I saw this slide and realized that it's only about a couple of percent, maybe 10% of the world. There's just a lot of languages, and that presents challenges. But I guess I'm getting close to my time. So what I want to say is that, you know, we need to think more about these basics, and we need to think more about our reach, about creating demand. And that's something that I don't think gets paid attention to much. How will we create the demand? We're able to fill the capacity. We have lots of room for growth. But if we don't work on how we're going to create growth, I think we have a serious problem. And I do love country codes for one big reason. Country codes say, I'm nearby, I'm your neighbor. We got to get that message through to the people that we're marketing to. So I guess that I made it. I think I did it in my 10 minutes. And I am sincerely grateful to be...
You have a minute.
I do have a minute. I'm sincerely grateful to have been able to present something that I think is a little bit not normal for an ICANN meeting. But it's my normal. I've always been in the business of trying to create demand for the companies that I work for, and for many years I've been privileged to work with good registries. So I encourage us to continue the dialogue, to look for more ways and more ideas, and to expand on this trust and these five pillars, and to keep it as a basic tenet of what we do and what we promote and how we help the smaller and growing TLDs, CCTLDs, to become the success in whatever it is that they're trying to accomplish. Thank you.
Wow. With 22 seconds to go. You're awesome.
It was a goal.
Yeah, that was great. Thank you, Joe. Thank you. Are there any questions on the floor? Specifically, I do. How do you work on to establish that transparency, and especially the part in which it engenders trust among the CCTLDs or the registry, any registry?
Well, you know, I think transparency really is, I mean, it goes beyond transparency to truth. It goes beyond, it's basically always recognizing. I remember early on when I worked for a registry that was very small, and I would try to bring this idea to registrars. So this was a channel that we needed to succeed. And, you know, there would be people that say, oh, we only have so many domains. You know, don't talk about that. And, you know, and I always thought, you know, that's not a good idea. We need to be open and upfront about what we have and not ashamed of it. Because I had an old boss who once taught me, the truth will never hurt you. He said, it may not always help you, but it will never hurt you. And I've always remembered that. And I don't think we should be ashamed about, you know, the stage that we are in our business. Don't try to act like you're something you're not. Be truthful, be transparent, and I think people will trust you more.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Are there any other questions in the floor? Seeing none, we'll move to the next presentation, and that would be the .fo administration.
Good afternoon to everyone. My name is Gudrun Poulsen, and I'm from the Faroe Islands. I took this slide because almost everyone asks me, okay, where is the Faroe Islands? So I marked it on the map. It's like a T. It's above England and a little southeast from Iceland. And it's a really small country. And we got the cctld.fo. Before I start to talk about the CCTLD, I want to give you a brief summary of the history behind the islands. The Faroe Islands are a part of the Kingdom of Denmark, but we are a self-governing region and have been for many years. We have our own parliament, we have our own prime minister, we have our own flag, our own language. And even though Denmark is a member state of the EU, we are not. The population in the islands is 50,000 people, and we are proud to be Faroese. The cctld.fo was approved by IANA in 1997. But at that time, it was delegated to DFO, which today is known as DK Hostmaster. But due to the history of the islands, the Faroese government requested a change to self-regulate the CCTLD back in 2003. And the approval went through in 2004, where a board of four directors managed the cctld.fo. The development of .fo, this is how it looks like today. There's a lot of snow. Due to lack of leadership, the Ministry of Trade appointed four new board members in 2016. And this was when I was given the opportunity to be the CCTLD manager of .fo. The CCTLD area was completely new to all of us. But since then, we have been attending ICANN meetings, Nordic meetings, and we are a member of Center. And we have been listening and learning a lot. In spring 2016, we changed the strategy behind .fo significantly. The the very strict regulation was rewritten, and it became much easier to register a .fo domain name. And since the launch of the new site, .fo registration increased 35%, approximately with 1,500 registrations. And we haven't even opened up for global registrars yet, and not even IDNs. So now you're wondering how many domain names we have. To date, there are 4,300.fo domain names registered, but our goal is to increase that significantly. And lately, we have been working strategically on a new site, which will be launched this spring. We will open up for global registrars, and it will also be possible to register domain names with Faroese letters. So we will open up for IDNs. Actually, we are not a member state of the EU, so we don't have to implement them. Yeah, we have to, but not until 2023. So we have a lot of time.
We'll have questions after she completes her presentation.
No, thank you. Fine. The numbers in this slides are only estimated numbers, which were gathered some time ago. But as it was very difficult and expensive to get a .fo domain name 2 years ago, many Faroese companies and individuals, they bought a .com or a .something else. But our hope is to get every Faroese company and individual to register a .fo, as they have a .com or something else. We have therefore implemented a strategic strategy that we intend to follow very closely. Oh, I don't know why the... No, it's not shown on the slide. Whatever. But our strategy is that .fo shall be the natural first choice in the Faroe Islands, and that .fo domain names shall be easy to register and easy to use, and that .fo is a safe choice, and that we continue to operate efficiently to keep .fo competitive. And this will be my last slide. Actually taking from my house. And I just want to thank you all for listening, and I will look forward to follow the work of ICANN and the CCNSO. Thank you.
Thank you, Gudrun.
I think I was very quick.
Doctor, go ahead. Well,
why didn't you show us a picture with the Northern Lights?
Then you have to go to the website, visitfaroeislands.com.
Awesome. Are there any other questions on the floor? Well, I have some. You said that at this point you don't have any global registrations. Can you expound on that?
We do have global registrations, but we don't have global registrars. So it is opened up for that.
And regarding the... So you have your special character set, and you intend to develop on that when you talked about IDNs?
Yeah, as the Faroese language is really different from other languages, we have our own, as in my name. I have a Faroese letter. And we have heard from our customers that they really want to register Faroese domain names. So, yeah, we will open up for that.
Excellent. Evie, please. No, not quite. Can Hello? Everyone hear?
No, there we go.
There you go.
Good afternoon and a nice presentation. Thank you very much. I wanted to know how are you promoting the .fo? I mean, what is your marketing strategy? And that's it. Thank you very much.
Our marketing strategy. We haven't really discussed how we're going to do it. So... maybe we can have a chat afterwards. And
are there any other questions on the floor? Well, seeing none at the time, we will move on. I continue to shut myself up. We will move on to listen to Irina, and we will listen to the Russian, that are you experiencing increasing price for domain name registrations? Huh, increasing price.
Thank you, Pablo, and good afternoon, everyone. Those of you who come from a European region and have a chance to attend a center GA in Brussels in October have already seen most of these slides, so you can do some of your own stuff if you wish, but I suggest you return back at least by the end slide because there are some new figures added. But for the others, I'm going to share our experience in the significant price increase, which I'm not sure has ever happened in the CCTLD world. Okay, how does this work? Right. Now. Now.
Perfect. I guess there is a delay.
Perfect. So the price for the .ru domain name, long 20 years time ago, it was really high. It was probably we started from $100. Then it was steadily decreased. But during the last almost 10 years, it was stable and it was equal to 70 rubles, which at the current exchange rate as of today, it's 1.2 American dollars or approximately 1 euro. That was the price we lived from 2007 till 2017. At the same time, the inflation was in place. According to the official data, it was 128%, if you calculate. So all the prices in the country were growing, except the price for domain name. Also, at the same time, according to the center data, in 2015, the median price for the registration and renewal of domain name in Europe was around 7 euros. And most of the prices for the Russia for the TLDs available and mostly popular in Russia are really higher. And I'm talking about the wholesale price for the registrar all this time. Yeah. Also, the registrars itself were feeling quite free to increase their prices. So the initial registration was more or less stable, but the renewal price was growing year from year, month from month. So in 2014, we actually did the first attempt to adjust our wholesale price, and this was moved by the negative trend in the domain name count we have noticed in 2014. We were also quite negative in our forecast for 2015. So we actually proposed just a small adjustment, around 12 rubles, which is almost nothing, in my feeling. But at that time, the proposal, our initiative has been declined. And the our council, which is was the main managing body of the organization, declined the proposal. So as an outcome, we had to be more accurate in our expenses, and as usually, advertising suffers first, marketing expenses. But couple of years later, we came back to the idea and started to come to this exercise like more thoroughly. So what we did the price elasticity study. It was first time in my memory we did this study. It was a qualitative research based on face-to-face interviews. Or telephone interviews, but personal interviews, not via internet. And registrars, resellers, and end-user registrants participated. And actually, that study gave us pretty good feeling that market more or less understand that the price increase will happen. It will cannot stay like this forever. That there are really reasons why the price might increase. And it also gave us a feeling of the potential range where we can, until which level we can do that, we can go. So finally, the decision made and which came into force in July 2017 was to increase the registration and renewal price 70% comparing to initial level. So we went from 70 to 120 rubles per registration and renewal. And the official background, the official explanation that we announced, that we used in our like public communications, was that the reason for that is that we need more more money to fund the broad-scale projects focused on the development on domain name registration system, on facilitating the security of the internet users, and on the broadening the use of global network to the benefit of the users, business, and state. So really our stakeholders wanted us to be able to put more in the big scale projects which are somehow fit our mission and our statute, and to be able to support financially a number of initiatives. But also before doing that step, we all actually did a quite detailed forecast. We keep track for several years of the statistics on how our customer base looks in terms of domain name administrators. So we track the number of domain names by the category registrants, like registrants who hold from 1 to 10 domain names, one registrar, and more and more and more. And they are actually the biggest and the best and the, actually the basic group, which we really care most of all, is the group of registrants which have from 1 till 10 domain names, and this is more than 56 domain names. So we think that this is our basis, and until this group grows, this demonstrates actually the health of the domain name zone. In the upper groups, we know that there are also domainers, there are people who invest in domain names or buy them for resale, and these are not our favorite customers. So we did forecast for each segment of this group of domain name registrars, which gave us like pretty good adjustment on what's going to happen with the number of domain names. And as we saw in the future, we were quite clear. Actually, we were very good in our predictions. So the decision, how the market reacted. The decision itself was made in February. It came into force in July, but it was made into February because we insisted specifically that we need to give enough time for the market, for the registrars to get prepared to this quite a significant change. So and when first we announced that, none of the registrars really believed that that would happen. Then a month later, they woke up and they started to struggle. They sent letters to our managing bodies. They arranged kind of voting, and surprise, surprise, most registrars voted not to increase price. could you imagine? We had an open public consultation. We actually have a complaint to the Federal Anti-Monopoly Service, which was assigned by 9 registrars, and we got a request. We sent our explanations, but the investigation is still ongoing. And finally, this decision came into force. What another side, an unexpected side effect of that, which we actually did not, haven't thought about, was the big increase in registrations and renewals right before the increase. So the registrar who was able to make renewals of the domain name in the according to the old price, they did it. That. And another side effect was a strong discussion regarding transfer, because we charge for transfer for the change of the registrars at the same price as for in Europe. So here are like here are some figures which show what's happening with the domain with the zones. It's total for .ru and .rf. So it's we are actually better than doing better than we forecasted. So we are quite happy with the results, and thank you for your attention. Sorry, I'm 1 minute
no,
late.
That was an amazing presentation. Especially, I'm very surprised with all of the research that went into this. Are there any questions on the floor regarding this price increase? Well, I have plenty of questions about that. And I tell you why. I strongly believe that registrars need to consider their markets and decide what the price is. I strongly believe that revolutions, as well as business models, are unexportable. Consequently, we cannot just look at a business model someplace else and believe that you can adopt it and that it will work successfully. For those of us who charge more than what normally others charge, it is extremely important to ensure that we provide the services that our community requires, not only our registrars, but our registrants as well. And I would like to know a little bit more about the pushback. Was there a pushback from the community? You did mention that some of the registrars complained about it. And how were you able to get them to adopt this, if in any way?
Well, first of all, since I joined the coordination center of the registry in 2010, I was asking why our wholesale price is so cheap. It's too cheap. The domain name has a value, and it should have actually the fair price. And after that increase, it's still less than $2. And so it's still much cheaper than most of TLDs charge. Mm-hmm. So, but returning back to the market, actually, those who complained, they are, these are registrars doing their business on domain name reselling and drop catching. So they have a big numbers of domain name registered. So one account has 200,000 domain names. It's one registrant definitely owned by these domainers. So for them, this is direct cost. Okay, so they definitely complain because they keep paying money for this domain name, hoping to sell it one day. But those who were quite neutral, and if you remember on the slides, there were mentioned several registrars which were quite comfortable with this decision. These are actually the biggest one who are having like 70% of the market. And, well, they passed some of this price to the end user, but they are dealing with real customers. And so if the price for their customers went for renewal from 600 rubles to 630 rubles, it's not a problem for the customer, and it was not a big problem for the registrars.
Thank you very much. That was quite impressive. Thank you. Now, we will hear the story about that U.S. And what I have to say, one of the things that I like to say about the U.S. is that it's the one CCTLD We love you all, but that U.S. is one that is close to our heart in Puerto Rico. So we have an excellent relationship, and that Puerto Rico is as much the home of that U.S. as it is in the mainland, and they are loved and welcome here. That said, that U.S., 27th awareness and outreach with Fernando España. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Pablo. My name is Fernando España. I'm with that U.S., and I'm actually excited to be back at the CCTLD, at the CCNSO. I see a lot of familiar faces, but I see a lot of new faces as well. I've been involved with Newstar pretty much since that U.S. was launched, and I had participated in the CCNSO before, but I'm glad to be coming back, and I look forward to meeting some of the new people that I see here. So I'm also excited to be able to thankful to be able to give you an update on what we've done in that U.S. last year. And give you some statistics right now. Last year we had about 2.1 million names under management. And we had, in terms of new create registrations, we had about 46% increase year over year. And our renewal rate, on a blended renewal rate, is 80%. And that U.S., we have what's called a Nexus requirement, where at the time of registration, the end user, they select whether they're an individual or a business. And because we have that information, 59% of the registrations are identified as individuals, and about 25% are U.S. businesses. So about the top 10, 80%, 89% of the registrations are done in top 10 countries, and the U.S. being one of those, with about 75% of the registrations being done from U.S. registrants. So last year we started off the year with a campaign, This Is Us. It's a 45-day campaign where we targeted the couples that were getting engaged. We came to know that engagement usually happens in the beginning part of the year, and maybe it's because Valentine's Day is around that time. So we targeted that audience for them to get a .us for their wedding website. They have to do planning, right? Once they get engaged, they have to plan their wedding, the location, et cetera. And a website is part of that planning. And we wanted them to be to use .us as their official website, personalized website. So this was an online social media campaign. We had 6.5 million impressions. And very happy that it drove about 20,000 visits to website visits. Facebook was the platform that worked better for us in terms of conversions. But we also came, this was the first time that we did something with Pinterest. And Pinterest came to be the most socially engaged venue to do this type of activity. Although the conversions were not there for Pinterest, but at least from the social engagement perspective, that was a good success for us. In terms of the total conversions, we had about 1,250 conversions that came through this, and those were done through a registrar partner, because we as the registry, we don't register the names directly. So after that, we started a promotion for the National Small Business Week during the week of April 30th to May 6th. So we wanted to also address the small business owners, what we wanted to do here is this campaign was targeted to U.S.-based businesses, small businesses, and we wanted to promote a lot of the materials that the Small Business Administration has, as well as promote some of that U.S. Cases that we have and promote the usage of that U.S. This was mainly an online campaign, Facebook and Twitter, and the call to action was pretty much for the small business to learn more about business resources, tips and tricks on how to get their business online. So kind of following with that, we did a campaign called Dream With Us. That was a campaign from June 26th to July 24th. And the target audience is the main, what's called the Main Street businesses, the small business owners who don't really have a website. They maybe have a Facebook page where they do some of their promotions. And we targeted those businesses to help them understand a little bit more on how to get online, that registering a website is not as scary as they may think. They don't really need a host master to help them with that. So we provided different toolkits that help them, one, start, get their website, get their URL, then how to get traffic to their website, and of course how to promote their business. This was done via social media, and we provided content for them to download these toolkits so that they can learn more about setting up their website. So here are some examples of the content that we provided. And during this campaign, we had about 2.4 million impressions, and we had about 1,200 page views on our blog post. And the toolkit actually was downloaded about 350 times during this period. Total conversions for this program wasn't necessarily to drive conversions, but it was more to engage the community and get them to learn about setting up their websites online and their online presence, how to deal with social media marketing, how to deal with hashtags, and ultimately help them drive traffic to their website or their business and generate leads. So the conversion for this program, we had about close to 900 registrations, and once again, those were done through a registrar partner. So one of the things that we also ended up doing is we refreshed our website. In 2016, as you can see on the right-hand side, it was more of a templated design website. And now it's a fully responsive website, works on mobile very well, and it has a fresher, cleaner look. And it actually helped us get some organic traffic. We saw about a 375% increase in traffic. Social media referrals increased 300% year over year. And new users average about 80% of the overall traffic that we get. So this was something that we needed to do for a long time, and in 2017 we ended up refreshing our website. And so we've done also some campaigns online on Google to promote .us, the keywords that we use, for example, our domain registry or TLD, and that's an ongoing campaign. We're trying to drive awareness of .us as the TLD of choice for businesses, families, couples, as a .us, right? And also to be able to provide resources to small businesses and have them go to about.us to learn more about the toolkits that we provide for them to get online. So we also launched this partnership along with Weebly. Weebly, as some of you may know, is a website builder. The partnership is to bring the digital learning platform to allow students to engage in the educational courses around the country. So .us is in partnership with Weebly, is proud to sponsor the EverFi program. And allow students to build a website, students 13 up to 13 years old and over. Oh, I think that's it. I don't know.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Are there any questions in the floor? Please come to the... Thank you, Patricia.
Patricia Poblete of Nick Chile. The growth of New Create is really impressive. What was it before these campaigns?
I remember before you asked me a question, you saw some of the growth that we had before. So we've done a lot of partnership. Other than the campaigns that we do, we also do partnerships with registrars. We rely on registrars to grow our business. So we do partnerships with them, do promotion flash sales sometimes. So that helps us in terms of the growth that we have. I have to get back to you on the actual percentage of prior to that. But we rely a lot on registrar marketing campaigns.
Okay, I'm Vojislav Rodic from .rs, which is Republic of Serbia, the country. But also it's the ending in many plural English words, like printers, computers, etc. I like your campaign about us, a couple of us. But let me tell you, for the past couple of years, I have some test questions for colleagues, not colleagues from the domain world, other colleagues and friends. First of all, what country is .me? Everyone says, what do you mean country? It's not me. It's, you know, it's like me. I said, no, it's Montenegro. Nobody knows. Over a million domains, maybe less than 20,000 are actually citizens and businesses of Montenegro. All the others are those who want a me domain. The same is with .co. What country is .co? What do you mean, what country? .co is something you register when your name is not available in .com. Then I say, it's Colombia. Really? So, the third question is, what's the United States CCTLD? Answers are, in 100% cases, this is not a scientific exploration, it's just my occasional question, .com. I said, no, not GTLD, CCTLD, the country, .com. I said, look, it has to be two letters. Then I say .us. None of the people I spoke to, on the other hand, you have 2 million domains. So my research was not that extensive. My question for you is, do you intend to make your campaigns based on CCTLD on the country, US of A, of which the CCTLD is .us, or on something else like us, the community or the pair or whatever the us is? Thank you.
Thank you for the comments. And being in the industry for quite some time, right, we face the same challenges about promoting that U.S. as the TLD for the United States. Just like yourself in the questions you had, everybody thinks, or at the time they thought, that the TLD for the U.S. was .com, right? So we definitely had an uphill battle to change that mindset. But our marketing activities are we are the .us TLD, we are America's TLD, so we are promoting to small businesses, individual users in the U.S. as .us. This campaign that we did last year, This Is Us, right? It was just a test that we did to play a little bit with the different meaning that us, when the wedding the websites. But we are the country TLD, so that's our main primary focus.
Hi, good afternoon. Peter Vergoto from .be. I might have missed it, but I thought that you were mentioning that 75% of .us registrations are coming from within the country. Does that mean that you don't have a specific nexus requirement, that it's also open for, let's say, non-US individuals and corporations?
Yeah, so 75% was for US businesses, right? The registration from the US, yes. So the nexus requirement, you can be a citizen that's living outside the US, and you can register a domain name, and you may be living in England, right? So There's also a lot of companies that are outside the U.S., but they have a branch office in the U.S., they do business with U.S. entities. And so that's where the Nexus category comes into play.
Okay, thanks. Yeah. Okay, so for instance, a Belgian company without a branch in the U.S. would be able to register a .us? Okay. Oh, thanks. Interesting.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions on the floor? Well, this has been a quite informative session, and I'd like to thank Joe Alagna, Gudrun Paulsen, Irina Danelia, and Fernando España. Can we give them a round of applause, please? I'd like to bring coffee break is up, and can we reconvene at 3:15? Back into the same room. Thank you very much. So we're open for coffee break, and we will reconvene at 3:15 in this room. Thank you.